expectation, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Colonel Barry Turner, who's calling us from Great Britain, and, of course, people don't understand, but the past and the present and the future of Great Britain and the United States are interlocked, and they're interlocked because of the close working relationship between the small clique that controls Great Britain, certainly manifested by Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, coming from the later Labour Party, and the Fabian Socialist Movement. And then the socialists who work within the elite here in the United States, many of them, of course, were trained at Oxford University in either Rhodes Scholarships or Fulbright Scholarships, but they're joined together by a common hatred of their nations and the desire to create a one-world government and to destroy Christianity, because that is the agenda of so much of what's going on today. So it's important that we know what's happening in our sister nation across the waves. And Colonel Turner is going to be talking about, of course, the latest scandal over there, where, of course, they found that many of the key people within the cabinet have been simply ripping off the government over there, ripping off the people. And apparently, the English people have finally gotten off their duffs and are beginning to say this is terrible. And even one of the cabinet ministers has been forced to resign. But I'm going to let him tell you this story about the political scandal which is sweeping Great Britain today. Colonel, go right ahead.
Hello. Well, it's very nice to be back. Tonight, I'm almost spoiled for choice. There's so much material piled up here on this scandal, which began at the beginning of May with the House of Lords in a small way. And the Daily Telegraph newspaper began to expose Labour members of Parliament, MPs, for what, in short, has been fiddling expenses. And day by day, there were more revelations. And then they turn their attention to the Conservative Party. And here we went again with yet more revelations. And it really is a question of the pigs having all their snouts in the trough. It was well known. Run like, I suppose, a club where you have 650 or so members of Parliament who obviously rub shoulders in the House of Commons. And, you know, they each know what the game is, and they can tip each other off. That's human nature. You know, if you put in a claim for this, you can work it that way. Try this one. Try another one. Be it household expenses or mortgages. And this is really what has taken root. But I think it's worth going back to look at the general rot in society, which this is really a symptom. An interesting article appeared in The Guardian. Of course, all the talking heads of the leader writers and the newspapers are picking this theme up. But one particular one which impressed me was that question of moral economy. In that, we have a me-first society. We become a society based on greed, which really launched with Margaret Thatcher 30 years ago, because she took over after a long period of industrial stagnation and bad management.
Hold that thought, Colonel. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Colonel Barry Turner, retired from the Corps of Engineers in the British Army. And of course, he's a frequent guest here at Radio Liberty. He's talking today about the scandal that is sweeping Great Britain. It started out in the House of Lords. It involved then later down the line people in the Liberal Party, people in the Conservative Party. Some people very highly placed in the British government have been found to be simply tweaking their expenses and utilizing public money to buy all sorts of personal things. Now, we should not be surprised here in the United States. We remember when Bill Clinton left the White House and he stole all the dishes and all the things. It took so many things out of there. But certainly the Bush administration wouldn't do anything about it. I don't know whether George Bush stole a lot of things or not. Certainly we know that a lot of people in government simply take advantage of the situation. Donald Rumsfeld, and anybody can check this on the Internet, Donald Rumsfeld reported that the Defense Department had lost, misplaced, had no idea, where $2.3 trillion had gone. $2.3 trillion. There were about $12 billion of the $20 billion we sent over to Iraq for development there to rebuild the country and to help the people and to pay the civil service. $12 billion of that just disappeared. We have no idea where it went. We live in a corrupt society here in America, but at least this is being brought out and brought up very dramatically over in Great Britain at the present time. So, Colonel Turner, you pick up the story.
Yes. I think it is something. It's not peculiar to our country or our culture, of course, but we have this me first materialist hedonism, as it was called in the paper, and of course it was initiative. Every man for himself. Those who got to the top merited what they earned, merited the profit, and of course over the last two decades it's become more and more internationalized. So the national ethos has become involved with the international economy and business, manufacturing and so on, the supranational corporations. And this really has taken the game out of the hands of the country alone. And we see this with the economic crash. So everything is on a much bigger scale. But back home, you see, in this country, we have had a moral rot running in parallel here. For instance, we have this socialist ideal of egalitarianism, anti-elitism.
Hold that thought, Colonel. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan Zedney. Colonel Turner is talking about the moral rot within Great Britain, and of course we have the same problem here, but over in Great Britain, of course, people really don't see, it's what you can get away with, it's not what's right and what's wrong. You know, it was John Adams writing about the American Constitution, said, our form of government was made for moral and religious people, it wouldn't work for any other, and the whole idea being you could not limit the power of government and let the people be free unless they were moral people. For remember, of course, the American heritage of parliamentary government or representative government originated in Great Britain. At one time, Great Britain was certainly one of the foundations of Christendom. The people there were moral as a whole. But those ideas have gone by the wayside, and now it seems that he who dies with the most wins. But you go right ahead, Colonel.
Well, here we have this competitive society, the me first. But you see, as I read the obituaries in the newspapers, we come across war heroes who are dying off. Of course, they are now in their 80s and 90s, one by one, and you read the records of these people, and then you look at the attack on in effect, leadership through anti-elitism, egalitarianism, the socialist ideal. We've produced education for all, in which everybody is expected to have a degree. And what we have is useless university degrees, say in tourism, you could almost say garden gnome management and that sort of thing. Quite absurd, sports management. Everything is given a degree, and people become unemployable because everybody has a degree, these meaningless degrees, and it dilutes the entire process. At the same time, we have the media, who have been busy undermining the standards, the social standards. We have an appalling presenter called Jonathan Ross. He's paid millions, and he has a chat show, which was so bad. Some of what he presented was so bad that he was suspended. To pay people like that millions is quite disgraceful. The media have a lot to do with this, of course. They look for stories. and you don't get the truth unless you have the genuine truth and a proper approach until you reach a scandal like the one we have, where there is something really genuine and meaty to get their teeth into. I mean, Prince Harry at Sandhurst made an innocent, mildly racist remark about a fellow cadet. It was picked up, and there was a media feeding frenzy on this. They wanted something to write about, they seized on it, and worked it to death. Now, you see, we our moral values are all inside out. The lack of management within our National Health Service, which is the biggest employer in Europe, is due, in my opinion, to the erosion of standards in education, the erosion of any sort of management pyramid, which begins at school. You learn in the senior forms how to accept responsibility. Now, they've got rid of a lot of that in the state schools. You produce people in managerial positions who have no managerial ethos. They are all from this anti-elitist society. So in the National Health Service, you have tiers of management from hospitals up through the system. And I was talking to a consultant, senior consultant in Yorkshire recently, and he said decisions are not taken. The problem is passed up the line for the simplest decisions because nobody seems able to take a decision, nobody cares to, and nobody dares in some cases. Now, in that sort of society, what we have landed up with in the political circles are career MPs and career members of Parliament. Now, 100 years ago, say, when they began paying members of Parliament, Parliament was inhabited by people who could afford to be members of Parliament without being paid, to a large extent. They also were able to express their own views, possibly with vested interests at heart, but nevertheless, they were independent. Now, you had the whip system coming into this parliamentary scene, where the two major political parties are controlled by the whips. Now, the whips make sure that members of parliament of their party vote as the government wishes, which means you have 650 MPs divided roughly in, I suppose, 40%, 40%, 20%, with the Liberal Democrats the minor proportion, who have to vote on block. If they fail, and they can be picked off by the whips, and they lose their party privileges, their office support, and so on and so forth. Now,
in other words, you don't have a representative government. You have government that's run by the political parties, and they really don't care what the people want. It's what the elite who run the political parties want. Would that be a fair assessment?
Well, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I said 40-40. Of course, those proportions for the two main parties are wildly out now because the Labour Socialist Party has a huge majority and has had for the past two elections. But you also have this situation in which the members of Parliament do not truly represent the wishes of the electorate. At election time, and it's probably the same in many countries, perhaps most countries, the manifesto is produced full of promises, full of good intentions, and a lot of it is forgotten once they come to office, and a lot of other things that were never in the manifesto are processed through legislation. And it's long been known that almost invariably for a constituent to approach a member of parliament with a serious problem will get them nowhere. They are answered with platitudes, reassuring platitudes, evasion, and of course, in the case of something like the invasion of Iraq, which is way up the scale of importance. They simply say that, that is the view of their party. There is no argument, analytical argument with an MP. And, of course, they go for photo opportunities. They're very quick to get their faces in the local paper because it's cheap publicity. And the public have long known this. But, of course, the newspapers, the Daily Telegraph in particular, have been almost lying in wait. And it apparently took 5 years of careful research to compile this catalogue this rip-off, this dishonesty, this institutionalised dishonesty, which we appear to have in Westminster. I think probably there are differences in culture, and each country is different. The French, Germans, Poland, and across the Atlantic. I remember seeing when George W. Bush first came to office, a picture of his cabinet, and it was said to be the richest cabinet in American history. Now, we have one or two people at that level who've been in government, but generally speaking, whereas one imagines here that the American cabinet is big business to a large extent, in this country, the cabinet tends to be owned by big business. And there is quite a difference of the two. How they operate in the end, of course, is another matter. But there are these differences in culture, and we have these career politicians. Now, one of the problems, of course, is that 100 years ago, and if we use the terms bluntly, the working class was shut out. They began to come to power through the Labour Party at the beginning of the last century. But the point is that because they came to power after the Second World War, you had this question of members of Parliament having to be paid, and having to be paid a reasonable salary, because many of them had no private means, private income at all. Now, from that clearly has evolved a system of payment. Now, the system of payment, of course, bases itself, broadly speaking, I'm no expert, but you can work this out quite easily. The system of payment works on the basis of two homes. Now, if they function in London, then they need a base in or near the City of London. Also, they need a base in their constituencies around the country. So you have two homes. Now, what they get is an allowance for the second home. Now, this is one of the abuses. And what they have been doing is boxing and coxing between the first and second home definition. And they have been claiming huge expenses for refurbishing or redecorating or furnishing their homes. Their homes, but they have been refurbishing one home, and then what they call flipping, they've changed the status, switched the priority of the first and second home, and then taken money for refurbishing the second home. And it's gone to quite extraordinary lengths. I mean, every newspaper that's been published, every Daily Telegraph that's been published since the beginning of May, has provided new evidence, yet more revelations about this corruption.
But of course, Colonel, this is what happens when the people don't have a religious foundation. One time, England was a strongly Christian country. Today, why, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the leader of the Anglican Church, is a Druid. I mean, he's on the wrong side on every social and moral issue. And with leaders like that, you really don't need enemies. And why should anybody be surprised when there's corruption in government?
Well, of course, he's a great equivocator. You're quite right where the present Archbishop of Canterbury is concerned. But you see, legislation, which has been processed through our socialist so-called Labour government, has made it now almost an offence to practice Christianity. It's put Christianity on a footing with all the other religions. It is no longer the national religion in practice as far as legislation goes. And we've had reports of hospital workers, nurses and so on, sacked from their jobs because they have taught Christianity with patients. It is that serious. And this is the way society has been melted down. We also, as a small country, of course, have mass immigration far beyond what we have the capacity to absorb. And for some reason, this country, with its welfare system, seems to be a focus. Now, this is quite out of hand, and the staff dealing with immigration have been run down. The barriers have been loosened, and no political party has the moral courage to prevent this, to regulate it properly. The civil service simply can't cope, and I don't think it's terribly competent anyway, understaffed. Now, the immigrants have taken over complete towns and cities. I live in the country, and we see very little sign of this. And, of course, people in small numbers are welcomed and assimilated, which has happened historically since the end of the war. But it's become a flood, and it is an international socialist objective, as far as I'm concerned, to dilute the cultures. You go right back to Marx, I think. They're diluting the cultures and destroying them. It's like a cuckoo in the nest. It gets in the nest, and then it gets rid of the fledglings. You've lost the original parent bird succession. And it is quite serious. And people feel very strongly about this. But you see, you're looking again at a government which isn't tackling the problem. And some, I think, are quite convinced that they quite deliberately don't tackle the problem now. So we have not only the religious legislation, we have a society which is so constrained, so administered, ruled by conditions you can offend somebody too easily. You've only got to make a chance remark, perhaps make an Irish joke, and somebody complains to the police, and you're called in. And if it's taken any further, you get your DNA taken, your fingerprints taken, and this is another problem which Parliament hasn't dealt with properly. It stays on the record permanently. Now, they have tried to loosen the ties here by, I think they've been to the European Court of Justice, but you see, the police do what they're told, and the police are commanded by the same sort of people, products of the modern education system, and you've got big trouble. But if we go back to this particular scandal, which is going to have repercussions, huge repercussions, I've got a note here, the House of Commons has been shoring up its financial...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Colonel Barry Turner. He's talking about certainly what's going on over in Great Britain. If you were, say, to tell an Irish joke, you know, they have Irish jokes there, we have Irish jokes here, we have jokes about blondes, you know, but if you were to tell an Irish joke in Great Britain, you could be reported to the police and you could be taken down and fingerprinted. They'd take your DNA and this would be on your record that you had told an Irish joke. What they're doing is progressively restricting the freedom of the people there. You have to understand that they have so many video cameras in Great Britain today in London that it's said that if you are walking the streets of London, they'll take your picture at least 300 times. Everything is moving towards total regulation, not only of the individual, even of the thought process, even of the jokes that you tell. But ladies and gentlemen, that is coming here to the United States, these so-called hate crimes. And if you are ever accused of a hate crime, why you'll be in real trouble. In fact, if we ever have the International Criminal Court, somebody over in Great Britain could charge you of a hate crime, and you would, of course, be actually sent to Great Britain. You'd be forced to go over there and defend yourself in an English court or maybe even in a Spanish court where you didn't even speak the language. We're moving towards this today, and that's one of the major things today is to get this International Criminal Court in. And therefore, any crime, say it might be considered a crime in Poland, well, my goodness, the Poles could bring a charge against you here in the United States, and freedom as we've known it and our Constitution will cease to exist because there is an organized effort to change certainly the language of our country, to change the culture of our country, and to destroy individual freedom both in the United States and Great Britain and merge us into this one world government where everybody will do exactly the same thing and you'll be monitored from the cradle to the grave and controlled and, yes, imprisoned if you were to ever speak out in opposition to what's going on. People say it couldn't happen here. It's already happening in Great Britain, and I'm sure we are just a short ways behind. But go right ahead, Colonel.
Well, the term we use here, of course, the term being used in the media, is a surveillance society. And that's pretty well right spot on. But I don't want to labor the Irish joke too much, but at the Holyhead port in North Wales, where the ferries dock for Ireland, they used to sell Irish mugs. Now, these were mugs with a handle on the inside. Now, it's perfectly harmless. I have an Irish neighbour who laughs at this sort of thing. But, of course, they've been withdrawn. They're no longer sold. I mean, these are the absurdities of the system. But if we can go back to this corruption, which, of course, is really the comeuppance for Parliament, which has neglected the genuine will of the people for so long. Member of Parliament claimed for Housefree's ducks on a little island in the middle of a lake, a small lake at his stately home. Now, I mean, it beggars belief that the population, the electorate, pay for a little house for ducks. And a cartoon appeared where two ducks were talking. And one was saying to the other, I think next year we'll have a conservatory added to our house. Now, I listened to two radio presenters on our early morning BBC Radio 4 program and discussing this. One of them was just helpless with laughter. I mean, it is so absurd, but it's happening. It's happening. This sort of thing is happening. We have one former cabinet minister, Elliot Morley, Secretary of State for Agriculture, who was claiming for a $25,000, I've tried to convert the figures to dollars, $25,000 mortgage that had already been paid off. Now, another member of Parliament, I haven't got the name handy, another member of Parliament was in the same position, claiming for a mortgage that had already been paid off. Now, these are people who in ordinary life, outside politics, would have their collars fingered very quickly by the police, and they're being excused as errors of judgment, oversights, and that sort of thing. Forgotten the details.
I know. It's really almost humorous when President Obama, who promised he would have, a really moral and fine cabinet, and so many people he's tried to put into key positions, they didn't pay their income taxes. In fact, the man who is currently Secretary of the Treasury, Timothy Geithner, and who is now in charge of the Internal Revenue Service, just forgot to pay his income tax, large sums of income tax over a number of years. Money was actually compensated by the International Monetary Fund, but he just forgot to forgot he was supposed to pay income tax on the money he got to pay the income tax with. And this is the guy who's in charge of the income tax today.
America, land that I love, stand beside her and guide her.
Al, this is Dr. Stan back here. My wife, who's Irish, had just called in and told me that she thought your joke about the mug with the handle on the inside for the Irish was hilarious. But go right ahead, Colonel.
And be careful she doesn't get arrested if she comes over here.
But she's Irish, so she can tell the joke. Go ahead.
Well, one of these days. But listening to some of the things you're talking about, we do have a lot in common in this field of corruption. Well, I quote here, Ruth Kelly. Now, Ruth Kelly resigned from the cabinet. She'd had about 3 cabinet appointments in succession. Devout Catholic, she compromised her ideals when homosexuality was voted in, which is a strange priority when she professes her devotion. Now, she, as a devout Catholic, claimed thousands of dollars for flood damage to her second home, although she had an insurance policy to cover it. Now, I mean, where do we go from here? I mean, this is just plain dishonest. We have another MP, $21,000 for a non-existent mortgage, and he flipped the first and second home by changing one from the other and, of course, investing in them six times, according to the paper. Sir Gerald Kaufman, veteran member of Parliament, claimed for a $12,000 television set. Now, that's the top of the scale. And for a $3,000 antique mirror. Oh, no, rug, sorry.
Now, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Colonel Barry Turner. Well, this is Dr. Stan, certainly Colonel Turner, is just talking about what some of the members of Parliament have done. I mean, certainly they would put in a bill for the mortgage on their home when the home had already been, the mortgage had been paid off. I mean, certainly one of the people, of course, put in bills for various household items. One of them put in a bill for $12,000 for a television set. Could you imagine what sort of television set you could get for $12,000? And what you're seeing in Great Britain is probably, you know, just the absolute corruption of these men who are supposed to be making the laws for Great Britain. But if you think that there's not corruption going on in Washington, D.C. today, at every level of both the Senate and the Congress, you are sadly mistaken. The only trouble is they'll go after certain people and leave the rest of them go scot-free. And unfortunately, many times it is the people who are honest and working very hard who will either have a plane accident or, as with one of the people who was on the Warren Commission, Congressman Hale Boggs, why? Because when his plane went down in Alaska, the FBI knew where he was, and they didn't allow anybody to go to get him. And everybody on the plane died of exposure when they knew exactly where they were. This is the sort of thing that goes on. They went after Congressman Hansen. They went out after Congressman Traficant. They were honest people trying to do a good job, and they went after Senator Stevens. Apparently, had taken a chair. He had taken a chair that somebody had given him, and he did not report it on the form. And they actually were going to send him to prison. 83 or 84-year-old United States senator, they just wanted to get him out of office. They wanted to remove him, and so they used the legal process because he forgot to report a chair somebody had given him. Go right ahead, Colonel.
Well, here's how to avoid the legal process. Second home involves, when sold, a capital gains tax payment. Now, a number of these people, including three cabinet ministers or ex-cabinet ministers, simply failed to pay the capital gains tax when they sold their second homes. Now, of course, if they're flipping, that is sort of moving on, renovating and moving on and selling, almost certainly there will be a capital gains penalty at each stage. Now, it's well known that this is a normal tax. We may not like it on a second home. But it is there, and of course it comes from parliamentary legislation in the past. They know it, they must know it, and yet they have ducked it. And of course it's coming home to roost now because the Inland Revenue are beginning to catch up.
But of course, are any of these people going to be sent to prison for, you know, violating your laws, for violating the income tax laws?
Well, you might say a lot of people have got their fingers crossed that this will be the end product.
But you see, the government gives very favorable, here at least in the United States, if you're one of the favored congressmen, if you're one of the favored corporations that's been cheating and ripping things off, why, you may get a little slap on the wrist or they'll drop the case. If you happen to be a little peon, you know, who's maybe in opposition to the government, they'll make a federal case out of it. I mean, certainly I know one federal prosecutor who was sent to prison and lost his license to practice because he made one false entry on a form, and of course basically it was because he was trying to get to the truth out about what happened in Waco, and they destroyed his profession. Why? Because he actually allowed some people to get into the evidence room and find out that the government had lied about everything that happened at Waco. And you can be a federal prosecutor, and you can, if they come after you, they're going to make your life miserable, and they'll try you not once, but over and over and over again, under one guise or another, or they'll get you under state law, and then they'll get you under federal law. If they come after you, they're going to get you. But it sounds like your members of parliament are just going to get away smiling and, oh, shucks, well, if it's just a mistake, I just forgot to pay my income tax.
Well, that's one system of eliminating the opposition that I wouldn't like to see imported here. I just hope the Metropolitan Police will do it for us. But you see, here is the hypocrisy of people who legislate and rip off at the same time, because we are lectured regularly about the need to work beyond the retirement age of 65 because there's a pensions time bomb. People living longer, of course, is a major factor, but working to 67 or even 70 because they don't have the resources to pay the pensions. Now, that's fine, except that, of course, we are into another question, money creation and the way money is could be created as opposed to borrowing the bulk of it, as happens at present. But you see, this is a parliament that talks this way to the electorate, and it's totally irrational, because as we lose our industries, as we introduce automation and other means of cutting the overhead cost of labour, people are thrown onto the labour market. And it makes no sense that people should work longer. They should be working much shorter hours, which in effect is a form of a long-term method of job sharing. And of course, far more leisure. But you see, this is not the rule that's applied for these people ripping off the cash.
Well, Colonel, I'd like to know what's going on over there financially. We hear all sorts of stories about Great Britain having real financial problems. In fact, they're even suggesting that the rating industries are going to actually lower British debt. In other words, saying, well, we don't think Great Britain is going to pay their debt, and that's going to cost you a great deal more as far as borrowing money, and your country borrows money just like we do here in the United States to pay our bills. But my understanding is that things are really very, very bad over in Great Britain as far as your economy is concerned, and maybe the one thing that might save Great Britain is if the whole thing went bankrupt and you got rid of your corrupt politicians.
Well, The consequences of the economic collapse, I think, are still being felt, and we haven't seen the end of it yet. And I think it's in a state of flux, because one reads the financial pages since the crisis really did explode a few months ago. The financial pages are in limbo. They're all guessing. And I don't think anybody's got it right. I don't think anybody knows. But one of the big problems, I think, of course, is we're now international. And I see President Obama has made two references, to one to an international money system, I seem to remember, and the other to an international tax. Now, you see, this is going further into the one-world system. But as long as we remain globalized on the present scale, we're going to suffer this problem. And as far as borrowing is concerned, of course, as opposed to creating the money, that is another key. Now, the only way I see to controlling this is to have currency controls, as were introduced in Malaysia, which saved Dr. Mahathir Mohamad from the rip-off from the money manipulators, Soros and Company, in the Far East. But unless we have these exchange controls and seal our currencies off so that they can function within the country without speculation from outside, we're never going to get anywhere. And I think this is another fundamental, but you see, it'll take a lot of political resolve, and a lot of these very few politicians have much of a clue about how money is created and borrowed. They just talk like parrots about borrowing. So where we go from here, I don't know. But certainly our industries are in trouble, and shops are closing. People are still being paid, of course. They're paid benefits when they're unemployed. So it's a recirculating system. You have to find the money somewhere. I wouldn't like to even attempt a mathematical analysis of this, because it's very complex. But we can see the general direction in which we're going.
Well, where is that? Where is it going to end up, Colonel? The thing is that here in the United States, for this year, ending the 30th of September, the Obama administration will admit that the debt is going to be about $1.8 trillion, and of course then they're going to have to borrow another $100 trillion somewhere, but they're going to have a debt of $1.8 trillion, and that may be very, very conservative. It may even be $2.5 trillion. You can't keep doing that. We're going to have a similar debt next year, and the year after that is going to keep growing. There's not that much money. There's no way we can ever pay off our debts. This is the problem. And I think that Great Britain is pretty much in the same position, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. I think it is. Nobody can see the end of the light at the end of the tunnel. And of course, the money which vanished because it never really existed has decimated personal incomes. It's decimated profits. It should never have been created in the first place. And of course, you create an enormous vacuum if your investments, your retirement investments, are built on this illusion of money, and it disappears. So does your pension.
And so then what do the people do? What are the people who've worked all their life, and they're expecting to get a pension from their employer, they're expecting to get a pension from the government, and the government doesn't have any money, and the pension funds are gone? Then what happens to those people?
Well, let me... While that's going on, let me give you another quote. A well-known conservative politician who claimed $150 for the cost of an electrician to put in 25 light bulbs. Here we go. I mean, it sounds fiddling, but it's another example where every conceivable expense for which one would normally put one's hand in one's own pocket is charged to the taxpayer. And certainly, whatever happens to the economy over the next few years, this particular crisis has really exploded in a big way, because MPs are now beginning to resign. MPs will certainly be standing down in large numbers at the next election, because if they don't, they will be deselected. The problem is, of course, to find anybody suitable to put in their places. But it is so rotten that the public anger is enormous, and it is going to change the political scene. It will have to change the political scene in this country. And with this exposure, which of course is read about around the world, I mean, what respect will a British cabinet minister have travelling abroad and preaching policies of one sort or another? I mean, they're going to become a laughing stock. The Conservative Party is ahead of the game because they have instituted a pretty ruthless clean-up. But the problem is that people close to the party leader, David Cameron, who have been close to him, who've been up to their necks in these fiddles. And the television interviews on television news programs with people on the streets, and they really have woken up. They've woken up to this, and I think an awful lot will follow. Because, as I say, it is very difficult to get close to an MP. They are insulated. The Westminster Club, they don't really want to know the electorate, for the most part. And this has been very evident in a batch of replies, parliamentary replies, written replies that I have to me and to other people who've copied them to me. And, you see, one of the problems here is that the British National Party, which they all fear and detest, is coming up fast and is likely to come up fast because that, by its very definition, national, means loyalty to the home front first and foremost. Now, they had a television program, a party political program on television this week. Now, I think it's the first time they've had one, because every party with a certain strength is allowed a party political program. And, of course, the bigger the party, the more programs they're given. But you see, to get in, get onto the television screen at all is quite an important step. And where the politicians have been neglecting the grassroots at local level, the BNP has been making strides, and they have been winning seats in local government. And, of course, the other parties, the major parties, are terrified of this. And the big division here is between socialism, international socialism, and international business, which, of course, covers the Conservative and the Labour parties now, the national ideal, the national concept, of course, is an impediment. And this is why, for one reason, a lot of people are keen to see immigration, because you dilute the national culture, you get rid of the national culture. This, of course, was Sir Arnold Toynbee in 1931 in Copenhagen, destroy the nation by stealth. And the British National Party stood up to the country. Their problem is that they have their roots in pre-war Mosleyite fascism. I mean, what Mosley was doing was aping the national socialism of Adolf Hitler. And they were wearing their uniforms and making their Nazi-type salutes on the streets. And they fizzled out because Mosley wasn't that clever a leader. But you see, they went through a phase where we had the national ideals, the League of Empire Loyalists and people like that. And this is what has distilled from those nationalist roots. Now, some of the movements were perfectly respectable, but the British National Party itself had a couple of posturing leaders. One was a man called John Tyndall, and they were really a watered-down version of Sir Oswald Mosley from before the war. And largely these people have moved on. They've been lost from the scene. And the present leader, Nick Griffin, is a very rational guy, and he talks very sensibly. I met him once, purely by chance. But for some people, even to meet the man by accident tends to condemn you as a hard-right, neo-fascist, far-right, you know, these clichés, these trigger terms that people don't really understand themselves.
But what they've done is they've given you no choice. You can't go to the nationalists because they're fascist. You can't stay with the socialists because they really... These are the sort of people that backed Adolf Hitler. The socialists backed Adolf Hitler, and so did the conservatives. They really don't want you to have a choice. As we have here in the United States, we have two political parties controlled by the same people. It sounds to me like you have at least two political parties over there going exactly the same direction, who fight back and forth. But in the final analysis, there's not a dime's worth of difference. They're all internationalists. They're all intent upon destroying the sovereignty of Great Britain and molding you into this one world government.
Absolutely right. I met a sewer worker. He's a technician who works in the sewers in the big city. We happened to meet when we were on holiday recently. And he said, I voted BNP last time. And he said, I was working down in the sewers, putting right some equipment. He said, we came up for air and looked over a garden fence. It's a city with a lot of immigrants. And we saw a notice, a big notice, saying, You've got your queen, we've got your country.
Hold that, we'll be back. We'll be back in just a moment with Colonel Barry Curry to wrap up the program. Well, that's interesting. You've got your queen and we've got your country. This was the attitude of the immigrants then.
Mind you, one shouldn't tarnish all immigrants with that, and they defend their own positions, which is perfectly understandable. But the general trend is of course, against immigration. Certainly it needs controlling, and this is all that the British National Party are saying. But they are vilified. We're at a point of balance, I think, where many people would join the party, but the vilification, the ritual vilification, is a deterrent. Now, I happen to be president of our local art society. I have been for 3 years now. It's not a political organization. But at the same time, if it became known that I had joined the British National Party, I might well be asked to resign, purely on principle. And this is the knee-jerk approach which has prevailed to date. And, of course, the press join in an orchestrated way, the local and the national press, and discredit anybody who gets close. A well-known ballet dancer joined the British National Party, and they had a go at her, you see. But it has reached a point of balance where it could well happen, because I was sent, along with extreme left-wing magazines, I was sent these British National Party magazine to read. And a lot of the content reflects the old style conservatism, family values, religious values, and queen and country first. But you see, you're not allowed to think this way when you talk about religious values, for instance, the moral standard, which has been destroyed, or is very close to being destroyed. You can see exactly the dilemma we're in. And where we go from here, I don't know. But the next elections, whether they come sooner now or whether they come later, are going to tell a very big story. And they simply have got to reorganize Parliament in a big way. And I don't think anybody quite has worked this out yet, because it's hit them so fast.
Well, Colonel, we're out of time. I want you to know I appreciate so much your being with us. I hope that you'll keep us appraised of what's going on over there. But the British people have to take a stand for freedom, or they're going to lose their freedom. Both of your political parties are controlled by the same things. Sometimes I could tell you about H.G. Wells. He was in on the ground floor when the socialists were working with the people of great wealth to destroy the sovereignty of your nation. But that's another story. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Colonel Turner has been bringing us a background of what's going on in Great Britain, but you can't understand any of this unless you understand the writings of H.G. Wells. In his book, An Experiment in Autobiography, he tells how the Fabian Socialists got together with the people of great wealth, the people who controlled the banks of Great Britain, and this was in 1901, 1908, an organization known as the Coefficients, and they planned how they were going to take over control of Great Britain. And, of course, their total dedication was, of course, to this whole idea of the world government, a world socialist government under a ruling elite. And the socialists and the people of great wealth have been working together ever since. H.G. Wells talks about this in his book, The Open Conspiracy. Nobody ever talks about that today. You're not even supposed to talk about a conspiracy. Someday we'll do some programs on what we can learn from H.G. Wells, who told us exactly what was going to happen, including when the Second World War was going to come, when, of course, the Third Triad of the New World Order was going to come out of Iraq. The trial for the New World Order was going to come out of Iraq sometime around 1988. Well, he's a little off on his timing, but there's so many things that the American people are not allowed to know. Well, first of all, I want to let you know that I have completed our talk. We now have the DVD available, Financial Armageddon. And, of course, we put the PowerPoint presentation in there so that you can actually go through this, and it tells you about who really runs the world. what was the invisible force behind Barack Obama that put him into the presidency? Where is America going? Who caused the financial crisis? How did they do it? And what are they going to use it for? It's all there in a 2.5-hour presentation. The Financial Armageddon, you can get the DVD. We suggest you get the syllabus that goes along with it at a reduced cost. You need to have this information. You need to understand how it all fits together. And, of course, you'll learn more from this DVD than from any of the others I've done, because it really puts it all together. That's Financial Armageddon, the DVD, the syllabus, and of course we have, book on the Brotherhood of Darkness. It takes you into the secret societies that have been around for thousands of years. We have our talk on the Forbidden Secret, which covers the same material but in much more detail. The Forbidden Secret DVD and the syllabus that goes with that. And you'll begin to understand so many of the terms that they use and how they use esoteric language so they can let the people on the inside know what they're saying, but you won't even recognize it. They hide their emblems in plain sight on the back of the dollar bill. If you haven't seen the DVD, The Eye of the Phoenix, you need to get it. And then you'll understand the emblems on the back of the dollar bill. They put them there because they understand, but they don't want you to understand. And then when you try to point it out, they lie. And, of course, when you talk to Masons about this, they say, oh, well, that symbol is not the triangle of the glorified eye, is not the Masonic symbol. No, it's a symbol of the ancient mystery religions that the Masons have used. So basically what they said is true, a half-truth. Everything is a half-truth. The emblem on the back of the dollar bill, the triangle with the glorified eye, has been used by the Masons for 200 years or more. And you can read their publications. They'll tell you that. And then they'll go on national television, and the Discovery Channel or the History Channel lets them lie and will not put on anybody to counter them. And you have to understand that television is being used not to reveal but to conceal the truth from the American people. That's why you need to get our material. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Don't forget the Conspiracy Conference. It's the 6th and 7th of June. And if you want to learn more, you go to their website, conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon.com. And then, of course, we do hope many of you will certainly remember we're going to have our all-day conference on the 25th of October. Mark it down. We hope you can come. And then, of course, remember the new DVD, relatively new, Vaccines and Brain Development. You need to know about vaccines, a great new four-tape set, Vaccines, Update 2009. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our provision and our protection.
Here, if you will call this gentleman back. He was very nice, and he has questions on Alzheimer's.
All right.
So he said he would call, but if you'll call him right back.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar. General Motors has reached a deal with some of its major bondholders that would give them a larger stake in a restructured GM. It involves swapping $27 billion in debt for 10% ownership in the new auto company. The offer also includes an option for the bondholders to buy another 15% of the company's stock at a low price. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is flaunting Tehran's expanding nuclear program ahead of next month's presidential election. Ahmadinejad says Tehran has boosted its capacity to enrich uranium. State media quote him as saying his country has more than